Welcome to the Woadsman Podcast, a show discussing all things camping, bushcraft, and outdoor adventure.
Right. What are we actually talking about?
Campcrafts?
Yeah. Campcrafts. We're talking about campcrafts today, guys.
We are talking about campcrafts today. And that's because we've had a day full of craft camps.
We have. We've crafted our camp.
We have.
Today. We have made ourselves more comfortable in the woods, which is what this is all about.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we're still in the woods where we've made the two shelters.
Yep.
So still the last two episodes were recorded in the very same spot. This is just the night after. And made it really like home, haven't we?
We have. And I think that's one of the things I love about bushcraft, is forging your little area into home. And then you leave it and you feel like you're exploring like new territory. And then you come back to your little camp you've made, and it's your sort of beacon of
safety.
Safety, yeah, in the woods. And you've made it feel like your home.
Yeah, and we've brought our little kind of homes from home, haven't we, as well? You know, just like our kit, our tools. You know, we've got our really nice sleep systems. We're both rocking bivy bags. We've got the multi-mat Trekker 10XL, I think, like foam mats. We decided to do that because we didn't want the risk of air mattresses and popping when we're doing shelters and all sorts. But yeah, it's amazing how comfortable you can get in a place like this.
Yeah, and often bringing little home comfort. So we both bring a goat hide with us.
Yep.
They're not essential, but they're really like a nice thing to sit on.
And yeah,
it just makes things feel so like yours when you have your little hide.
It's like a little carpeted area for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So we woke up this morning. We had our shelters all in situ where we'd made them yesterday, and we're pretty comfy. They're really nice survival style shelters.
Yeah. And they had rained, hadn't it?
It rained. Rained for a good hour and a half last night.
Yep.
And we stayed perfectly dry. If we were staying out here and there was storms and real heavy downpours sort of due to come in, we would definitely double the thatching.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, just for that kind of extra security. There's plenty of leaf litter around, so it wouldn't be hard to do. But knowing the current kind of forecast and looking at the sky, etc., we're quite confident with what we've got. We've still got a really good thick layer.
We have, and the layer we have on there actually withstood a decent rain yesterday, and so we know we're not going to get wet tonight.
Yeah,
we know that our shelters are fine, so we didn't actually touch them today. We left them as they were, and we focused on making ourselves more comfortable around camp. So
yeah,
we went out and we scouted, and we found that the foresters have felled a load of hardwood trees. There were some
ash, oak.
All sorts of
loads. Yeah, really beasts as well. You spotted some really nice bits as well, didn't you?
Yeah, so I found this sort of maybe 2 meters long, I'd say just over 2 meters, ash round, and it was a fairly significant chunk.
Yeah, a big old bit, and it had a kind of wind tear on the end of one of the limbs, didn't it?
And that gave me the idea that we could flatten the top.
Yes. Yeah.
So we painstakingly dragged this chunk of a bit of wood through the forest back to our camp, puffing and blowing by the time we got back. And we decided that was going to be our first project of the day. So what did we actually do with it, Liam?
Well, it's now currently got our hides on the top. It's got a few little bits on there, a hand-turned wooden bowl by Tom that he did on his dad's lathe. And it's actually a fully functioning bench with six seasoned oak legs. Just a really nice flattened top that was all done with axe and then finished off with knife and the gill pin. So yeah, just amazing. Everything was done with a traditional auger as well, wasn't it?
It was. So the legs, the holes that we bashed the legs into, we drilled out by hand with a hand auger, just as they would have done in the olden days.
Yeah, it was really, really rewarding. It's such a brilliant bit of kit. It's at the perfect height. It's stable. We had a little bit of kind of faffing around with the feet, but that's as expected. You've got to find the right position with the ground because it's uneven anyway.
That's it. We're not measuring the angles of them. We're not we're not using a tape measure, we're just eyeballing things. So yeah. we eventually got the legs the right length to be sort of a perfect height for sitting and for it to be completely sturdy and not wobble at all. So really nice bench, and we'll talk a little bit about how we made that in a second. But there are a lot of different styles of bench that we could have made. We talked about a couple. We could have made like a sort of tripody thing,
mm-hmm.
And then had two bits sticking out that we could have then put logs on as a sort of seat, and it would have had a back.
Yes,
that's one option.
Could have got some, you know, some rounds and flattened them off, some like shorter logs, sorry, and flattened those off, and then sat another log on top.
Yeah,
you know, that's one I've seen quite commonly done.
Sort of same way you'd make a raised bed, but a raised bench.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So there's loads of different ways, and it was even interesting, you know, the different types of wood that can be used for different parts. But we went for this kind of leg version because we wanted to use this auger that my mum got me for Christmas, which was really cool. And it did the job really, really wonderfully. We drilled in about an inch, didn't we?
Yeah, inch and a half, maybe. Yeah. So that there's a good amount of the foot sticking into that log.
Yeah.
So it's got strength. I mean, I'm not a light boy, and with two of us on it, and like I could probably dance a jig on it, and it would be absolutely fine.
Yeah, and it's a really nice, nice kind of basic, but very fit for purpose thing. And it's, you know, just gives you so many ideas for other things. You could go so many stages off of that, couldn't you?
It does, and like you camp in these woods a lot, and I've started visiting quite often.
Yes.
And so we do a lot of camps here, and we record a lot of our episodes in this area.
Yeah, not a specific location, but
within the woods.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we've flattened it off, we've taken quite a lot of the weight off. We could quite easily move this around if we had a camp.
Yeah.
10 minutes away, something like that, 15 minutes away. And it would just, it's just a thing that we're sort of gonna hide and leave and use when we're in the woods together.
Yeah, it's a really nice addition. Because it, and even if the legs, you know, one of them breaks or goes missing, it's not going to be a hard thing to replace, is it?
No, it'd be the quick job just to knock up a new leg. And I think bushcraft, the skills that we learn,
yeah,
the sort of confidence we get with our tools, to just be like, you know what, I'm tired of sitting on the floor, let's just make a bench.
Yeah.
And you know, it's that sort of self-sufficiency of actually, okay, cool, we got the tools for it, we know what we need to do, we know the basic techniques that we need to improvise a nice sort of seating area.
Yep.
And lo and behold, hour and a half of hard graft and using our tools and sort of a bit of teamwork.
That's it.
And we've got a three-person bench.
Really good bench, yeah. You could easily fit two or three people, maybe even four at a push.
Mm.
And the other thing that's really awesome about it is that not only does it purpose as a bench, it purposes as a small table for when we're cooking. So let's say if we are knelt by the fire cooking, we can put things on there. At the moment, like I said, we've got our hides on there and some of our gear. And it's just a really nice kind of end closing kind of piece to our camp, isn't it? It makes it feel like an enclosed kind of space, a little bubble.
It does. It's our home now.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't leaving.
No, that's it. I ain't leaving with you, mate.
This is more comfy. But no, it's got multi-use. Like, if you're sharpening, it's nice to have a flat surface. And now we've flattened the top off it, it would be perfect if we wanted to touch up our tools.
Yes.
If we need to do food prep, we could use our boards on there and keep it out of the dirt so that we don't end up with duff in our risotto.
Yeah, that's it. And, like, talking about crafts even, because that was, you know, that's a whole craft in itself. We're under shelters that we've crafted ourselves. And earlier on, we were both doing craft sat on the bench. You know, you were carving a really nice spatula out at Hazel.
Yeah, it was just an offcut. It was actually the end of my Y branch that I cut off just to get the right height on my shelter.
Yeah.
I don't like wasting green wood. If I've bothered to take down a branch and I have a bit left, I'll probably make something with it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, I just I sat down on a log, had a little quiet half an hour, smashed out I smashed out carving this spatula. I axed it out, really had a good time doing it because I love carving.
Yeah.
Love anything with an axe, to be honest. And yeah, then I came and sat next to you on our new bench, and I finished it all with a knife, and gifted you the little spatula. I mean, it's still very wet, it's still green, so I've advised Liam to sort of dry it slowly. Yeah. And then maybe do a few finishing cuts, because hazel, I find, is a bit finicky in the green to get the finishing cuts to meet up. Now,
yeah.
It's still pretty...
kind of frays, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does fray. And it's still a pretty spatula and it's almost finished. But I get them to the stage that I've given it to Liam, and then I will wait for it to season before I do the finishing cuts, the burnishing, the oiling, things like that.
Yeah.
And I just find you get a neater finish that way.
Yeah.
So I've just, like, Liam's a really good carver as well. So
oh, thank you.
Liam's just going to finish it off once it's dried.
Yeah. And, you know, on the topic of carving, actually, definitely go check out Tom's work at Campfire Carvings. He's got an Instagram and stuff like that, but also a store. And you can get some of those pieces. I just actually gave away a 3-set piece for a 4,000 subscriber giveaway on my YouTube channel. And me and Tom kind of collaborated on that. So he very kindly gifted piece as well. And yeah, just absolutely awesome set. And his carving skills are great, mate. Well, his.
Thank you.
Yours are great.
Thank you, dude. No, I just love doing it. Like, it's just a hobby. Love it.
Well, it was really good to be, you know, watching you do that on a bench that we'd both worked at, you know, with your small forest axe, my auger, a little bit of finishing work on the gilpin that we both did with it.
That's it.
Yeah, it was so great. And I was doing a little bit of flint knapping next to you.
You were. So what did you make, Liam?
Well, I made a primitive arrowhead. Actually turned out really, really well. There was a slight little bit of lack of symmetry, but especially with stone, you've got to know when to call it. Flint doesn't like have a good habit of behaving. So I was really happy with how it turned out. I just used a really nice antler set that Daniel Almier from Bushcraft UK sent me a few years ago, and I hadn't really had a chance to knock anything out, and I found some really good nodules of flint a few weeks ago, so I managed to drive a few flakes off, and I had a few flakes in my bag that I picked up at the Bushcraft show. And yeah, it was just really, really good. I used the pine pitch glue that I made in one of my previous YouTube episodes to fix it onto a hazel stick, and just had really good fun with it. It
was, yeah, so that's another really craft.
Nice. Yeah.
The glue. So you melted pine and spruce resin down over the fire.
Yeah, any sort of pine or spruce resin. I prefer to use the kind of fresher stuff rather than the harder stuff that you find kind of crusted onto on the trees, and the reason for that is it's a bit less brittle in the end product. Yeah.
I guess once it's hardened, it's got more impurities and stuff in it.
Yes, yeah, and it's also kind of, you haven't caught it in that phase where you can manipulate it, integrate the charcoal, and then you're kind of, it's already turned into that glue. It's already a hardened form of that glue.
It's crystallized, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. And then, so you melted it down, you then ground up some charcoal.
Yeah.
And then as an extra step, if you have access to animal droppings or something, you can add those in as well, can't you?
Yeah, you can add those in even to replace the charcoal. Right. So it's kind of acts as a temper. So it gives a little bit of kind of that fibrous material / organic material to bind everything together. Again, with the charcoal, it's really, really good. Given a kind of bond, it's that fine powder that just gives it a little bit of body, and that's what you're looking for when you mix it. You'll know if you've overdone it because it will look grainy. You want it to still be smooth,
yep,
but it's cohesive.
That's it.
Yeah, so a really good craft, and I just put that on a little stick. I know you've done it before, haven't you?
I've done the pine pitch glue. Really enjoyed doing that, actually. I've never actually stuck anything with it, though. I've just got the blob of it.
Yeah, nice.
Still on a stick at home.
Well, we'll have to, like, nap you up some bits and then, you know, just have a little play.
Yeah, well, it was great to see you napping. It's a skill I want to get better at. I have napped, like, a hand axe before.
Nice.
I often make, like, the shards I need for my flint and steel. I just smash rocks together and get sharp edges and then use those for my flint and steel kits.
Good idea.
But I'd like to learn how to pressure flake. I've not done that too much. I've done it once or twice. I did a course actually at the Bushcraft Show one year with Will Lord, and it was amazing. He's such a talent, but
very talented.
I was so embarrassed because on my first attack on the flint with my Hammerstone.
Yeah.
I split it and I wasn't wearing gloves, and shard drove into my hand and it literally slit open my hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't want to like make a fuss because I was like, it's Will Lord. He's a caveman. Like, he ain't gonna want to like give me a plaster. Like, that's just not what they did in the caveman
times. No, and there ain't no birch polypore around.
So I just like carried on.
Lovely owl. Just there.
Yes. No, absolutely. It's nice to hear all the woodland sounds.
Yeah. Sorry to interject.
No, it's cool. So I'd cut my hand open on this flint, and I carried on for the rest of the thing. I kept then dropping the flint because there was blood all over it.
No.
And I looked down, and Will does this amazing thing at his sort of day courses where he builds like a shelter, yeah. And it's got all hides on the floor. And
it's
fully
in, like, living history, isn't it?
It is. It's proper like caveman style.
It's great.
I looked down and there was a beautiful hide that I'd been sitting on, and there was just blood speckles all over it.
Oh no, you're adding to the realism.
So I was like, if anyone who knows Will Lord listens to this, you can apologise to him for me for bleeding all over his hides. That was me. I got out of there quite quick before he noticed.
I'm sure he probably has lots of, you know, deer blood splatters and stuff all over. You know, he does a lot of that stuff in those. He does a lot of really good content and very admirable flint napping.
Yeah.
The pressure flaking can be quite a fun task. It's, you really just got to catch that very fine edge.
Mm.
And then one kind of push down and... the funny thing is with flint, guys, if you haven't ever worked with any, is normally you're working kind of blind, so you're pushing from one side of the flint or striking from one side of the flint, and the actual result that you're going to get is on the backside because you're knocking off that flake, so to speak. So you'll put this pressure down and find the very edge on the bottom and put the pressure down, flick off the bit of flint and turn it round, and hopefully you've revealed a kind of, you're starting to taper an edge, and this is all for the refinement of an edge. And more often than not, what can happen is you get a little bit overconfident and you take a little bit more than you should, and then the whole bit kind of snaps off, the corner goes missing or something like that. So it's trials and tribulations with flint.
No, it really is. Talking about trials and tribulations and biting off more than you can chew with flint, I've got another funny story. I'm just going to divulge and,
yeah,
and
absolutely
tell the guys while and gals while I'm on it. So I needed to collect some more flint for my flint and steel kits. I also been talking to Liam and wanted to get on my napping and stuff a bit this year as well. So I went out with my partner, and we went for a nice walk in an area that I know is a heavy chalk base in the soil, and it's a great place to find flint. And lo and behold, first 10-15 minutes into the walk, I find, just slightly off the path, a couple of huge flint nodes.
Just the dream.
Like amazing pieces of flint. Yeah. And I'm like, I gotta have them. And all I brought with me was a little haversack, and I just filled it to the brim.
This is just one shoulder strap.
Just a one shoulder strap haversack, and I filled this thing up with flint.
The old switcheroo goes.
And we ended up doing a 4 mile walk, 4 or 5 miles with this flint in my side satchel. And I can tell you I was pretty tired by the end.
Yeah, well, it's not flat up those
ends. No, so it's called the Surrey Hills for a reason. And yeah, our walk that we did, our route, it had a lot of hills, and some of them were incredibly steep, and like Emma was just pegging it up the hill, and she would like look back and there'd be me like 10 feet off the bottom of the hill, just like
slugging this haversack,
trying to drag this haversack up behind me full of flint. So needless to say, I wish I'd stashed it in a bush and just done the walk and then come back.
Well, shout out to the maker of the haversack.
Yeah, that was Duluth. That's a Duluth haversack, actually.
Nice gear.
Yeah, good bit of gear. I've got a couple of different haversacks. One I've had for years. Got it second hand, so I didn't actually pay much money for it at all.
I love that.
And it gets rather abused, bless it, but still comes back for more. So
I've been loving haversacks. I used to have a really small yellow wax canvas. It was really thick canvas, really, really thick yellow one that I used to use when I was a kid. And alas, that's at home now, hung up, and it's retired. But last year at the Bushcraft show, I got the Browns Bushcraft wax canvas one. We both got one, didn't
yeah,
we?
It's brilliant. Yeah, and really like it. I use that thing all the time.
So lightweight, you can just stuff it in a pocket and it takes up no space, does it?
No, I love it. I think it's a brilliant design.
Yeah,
it's
good very shout strong. For getting that as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we both have got a lot of use from our Browns Bushcraft haversacks.
Yeah.
And then you've also got a new satchel, haven't you, that you've been using a lot?
Yep, that's it. So it's a bit bigger than, you know, your average kind of haversack, but it's got loads of molly webbing on the outside. It's a really, really nice colour, and it's by Helicon Tex. So I've been doing a little bit of kind of collaboration stuff with them. They really kindly sent me a few bits of gear that I've been using and testing and just thoroughly enjoying. And that bag has just come in so handy, be it as a food bag, as a camera bag.
Beer bag,
that's it. Or a combination of all three. Normally when I'm on trips and I'm filming, all the camera stuff will be in there. The extra kind of beers will be in there. And, you know, a few bits of food and anything else I need to whisk in. So sometimes you don't always see it in shot, sometimes you do. But it's a really, really good, lovely bag. It's got kind of pockets on the side for an axe and a saw, which is awesome. And yeah, I'm just really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's like a majorly beefed up haversack sort of side satchel thing. Yeah. Very cool. And it's perfect for bringing in your craft tools.
That's it, yeah.
So on camp crafts, obviously, like, we don't want to cut... We've talked about benches and stools and things like that, and I actually have a stool at home that I've made, and I sit on it all the time. It's got legs just like we've made with this. I used an auger, and little camp furniture and stuff. It is a great addition to your sort of bushcraft practice.
Yeah, you could even make a little stool, couldn't you? A three-legged stool.
Yeah.
In a really similar fashion.
It would look great.
With a little round of a...
Yeah, it's just sort of round.
Yeah, exactly.
Be great. So, yeah, camp crafts are great things, and pot hangers, they would all count as camp craft. Yeah,
I love a good old pot hanger.
Yeah, so it could be like a tripod you have over the fire that you could use to suspend your Dutch oven.
Yep.
It could be a crane sort of design, like MCQ Bushcraft used to show on his videos.
Yep.
They're brilliant. I love those crane pot hangers. Use them all the time. And actually, it's when we do trips where I make a pot hanger, that's often the style I will go for, because it's easy, it's simple, and it's also really practical because you can lift it up, carve different notches in your hanging stick.
It's a really good knife skill to practice as well.
Yeah, carving notches is a fantastic skill to learn.
Yeah, it is, because it crosses over to, like, you know, even fire lighting, just that fine kind of motor skills with that tip of the knife, with the, you know, choking up on a blade. It's good. It's really handy.
Well, they actually used to do a thing called a tri-stick or a notch stick.
I've seen it.
And it was basically try every different type of notch and stuff on a stick. And it's
even drilling a hole through it.
Yeah, it's just to improve your carving and your knife skills. So definitely something worth trying for getting your camp craft game up there. So yeah, there's so much stuff you can do. Spits for spit roasting. You could make, like, addition side walls to your shelters. Like, there's so much in camp craft. Like, I'm not going to sit here and just name every every single one, because we'd be here all night.
Yeah, just never ending.
But I think what will be useful is just talk about, like, the basic tools needed for a project like we did today. So what we did is we took the log, we sawed stop cuts into it. So the first tool we'd need would be a saw.
Yeah, and stop cuts, for anyone who doesn't know, are kind of cuts all the way down to the desired level of kind of near the desired level of finish, and you do that all the way along the piece so that then you can cut from the side and join those all up as if you were doing dot to dot on paper.
That's it, and it makes the axe work so much easier. It's for stock removal, it's great.
Chunking out
absolutely
stop cuts is a dream, isn't it?
No, it really is, because huge chunks fly off and you're like, dinner plate.
And what did we chunk it off with?
We chunked it off with my small forest axe. So
that's saw and axe we need?
Yeah, so an axe is a fantastic addition to your bushcraft and your campcraft kit. I mean, some people are a bit worried about using an axe, and for good reason. You need to pay them a huge amount of respect.
Yeah.
They are the axe that if something goes... they are the tool that if something does go wrong, the implications for that accident are severe.
Yeah, very massive. They bite.
They do, and they've got the weight and the momentum, the inertia behind the blade. So it's just, if you're using an axe, always work out where it's gonna swing, and if you miss, Where will it glance off to? Make sure no one's standing within the sort of immediate area.
Yeah.
So that if you let go of the axe, you're not going to like throwing axe your best friend.
Yeah, definitely watch some kind of axe safety videos on YouTube. Get yourself up to scratch on the kind of fine skills and the do's and don'ts, and kind of maintenance, because, you know, a blunt tool is far more dangerous than a sharp
one. Yeah, you were impressed by how sharp my small forest axe was, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, it just cut through it like butter, really.
Shaving sharp.
Yeah, really, really nice.
Because you don't want to have to struggle with the tool. You want to work with the tool. So I always keep my axes really sharp, just like it's a knife or whatever.
Yeah, and one end of my Gilpin blade, which was another thing that we used on this, was actually just a little bit duller. And I had been honing it, and it just didn't have as much as an edge as the lower half, and you could really notice that in use. So it's definitely worth noting about tool sharpness.
Yeah, so Liam mentioned the Gilpin. We use the Gilpin as an improvised push or draw knife.
Yeah, and the Gilpin's like a big blade, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a really long blade. I'm not sure exactly
it's
how long.
Jamaican butcher's blade, I believe.
Right,
a butchery blade in original forms, but it's got to be, what,
10 inches?
Yeah, it's got to be.
Something like that. But it allowed us to sort of hold it and use it a bit like a draw knife. And you don't need that tool to make a bench. It was helpful for us to get a nice fine finish on it.
Absolutely.
But it's an additional thing, just like a draw knife. Like I use draw knives at home. I have a shave horse I've built, which is another camp craft.
Very similar to the bench.
Yeah, we commented that we've basically made half a shave horse here.
Yeah.
Could just add the swing arm and the little platform and the
you're away. Almost.
You're away pretty much. So, so draw knives are great for stock removal and for making flats. So if you have a draw knife, it could be really helpful for making something like this, like a bench.
Yep.
But they're not essential.
No, definitely not. And, you know, even an axe, you don't have to go for a massive axe. Obviously, tasks take longer with smaller axes, and a small forest axe or something like that is just a perfect kind of size, isn't it? The grand spores.
That's it.
You know, you could probably do it with a wilderness hatchet or something like that.
Yeah, you could.
You know, just take you a little bit longer. If that even, you know.
That's it. I mean, the 20-inch or 19-inch small forest axe isn't a big axe. It's quite a compact thing, but it does work really, really well. And because it's not that heavy, you do have a lot of control over it.
Yeah.
So if it does skip out, you can sort of regain control of that tool pretty easily.
Yeah, because we're working with a big flat surface on that, so there's bound to be some glancing action.
Yeah, you know? Do expect some rebounds as you hit it. If the blade doesn't bite in, it may just glance off.
Yeah.
So just be aware of where that would go in that case.
And of course, after we'd flattened the top off, so with the stop cuts, the saw and the axe, we had to then drill the holes in, didn't we? So
that yes.
With an auger, and you've probably heard us speaking about this before. It's kind of like a Scotch-eyed auger.
Yeah, so what is an auger, Liam? Is it some wise woman who looks at the entrails of birds to find out what what's going on? Or is it a tool?
Well, this particular auger is a tool. It's basically like a big, hefty drill, very original kind of drill that's got big, sharp kind of chisel, almost a chiseled bit almost, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really, really sharp, quite wide. This was about an inch wide.
I'd say maybe an inch
maybe
and a half.
Maybe an inch and a half, yeah. And it's started off with a kind of screw taper on it so that you can really get it in. And you put a stick through the top, which has like an eyelet.
Yeah.
And then you can twist it to drill through. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's a fantastic utensil, and it is. Yeah, its purpose is to drill holes for things like making benches and things like that. And it is a fantastic, fantastic tool. And your one, Liam, I was really impressed with. It cut really cleanly.
Yeah, it was really nice. I wrapped the handle in leather because it's actually got a kind of like a splitting / shaving kind of end on the eye, hasn't it, as well?
Yeah.
So, which I kind of nicked myself with as well. Yeah.
Get out the med kit.
Yeah, that's it, a bit of tape. But again, just that's another really handy tool. Let's say if you were doing a permanent shelter, really handy for affixing things, you know, making joints, kind of mortise and tenon kind of joints even.
Yeah, I used it to, I used pegs. My one to make a a spit, because you know you have that problem where you put a spit in and then the spit just turns.
Oh, yes.
I drilled a hole through a piece of hazel.
Lovely.
And then I tapered the end of the spit.
So it seems like you can stuck in.
Push it in and then it will stop it turning. Love and it that. Stayed. So that is another bit That's of campcraft.
Great little campcraft. Yeah. You have to do that one.
Yeah. It's a good little tip. Only thing is, if you make the hole too big in the piece of meat and then the meat turns on your spit,
no.
Which
the dreaded every always
always happens.
Oh, alas.
But no, making camp crafts is just the most fun thing to do when you're out, making yourself comfortable, because I think, as you said at the beginning, Liam, it's all about making your little patch of home.
Yeah.
In the woods.
We are home now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So comfortable. We're going to have some food in a little while. You're cooking up an absolute feast tonight. Go on.
So I'm going to do a campfire risotto. I've got some dehydrated mushrooms of various woodland species. I've got some chorizo. I've got garlic, onions, and risotto rice. And some stock. So we're going to make a lovely campfire risotto. We're going to have it with a side of bannock bread. We're going to do a traditional bannock just on a tilted pan at the side of the fire to slow cook that.
Nice.
It should be a really nice meal.
I think it'd be good. We've got some Buxton cloud water, I think it is. So some Buxton Brewery, a tall boy each, and then we've got a few gamma rays, little small stubbies from Beavertown, and a neck oil, I think. So just going to relax into the evening with that nice risotto and a beer or two. I'm just having a really nice time. We've got some oak on the fire that's creating a lovely bed of coals. And we've cooked up some really nice food today, had some jalapeno and red pepper sausages.
They were lovely.
Jalapeno and red Leicester sausages. They were good, weren't they? And squadron leader sauce, we've been digging into that from the state detective. Again, big thanks to him for that. Really, really tasty stuff. And just cannot wait to get a bit of grub in me, to be honest.
I'm getting really hungry.
It's one of those things with campcrafts, isn't it? Builds up. You use a lot of energy.
Oh, massively. We've been using tools pretty much all day, because we finished making the bench, then we're like, right, let's do some flint napping. Okay, let's do some spoon carving.
Yep. Yeah, it was just keep going, wasn't it, really?
And it's the best way, because we've made some serious good memories together today. We'll remember this camp for a long time, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely let us guys know if you have done any camp crafts, if there's a particular camp craft that you just absolutely love doing when you're out. You know, do you love making a spoon or carving a little character? I know Tom does both of those things.
Yeah, I love doing that. As soon as I get my whittling kit out, I'm like, right, I'm happy now.
Yeah, it's great. Even me, when I've got my hands not tied doing something else, I'm normally, you know, I'll try my hand at it, I'll make a spatula or whatever, or now I don't have to because Tom's made me a beautiful one, and again, thank you so much for that, mate.
You're welcome.
Really, really nice piece of wood. But yeah, send us in any of your little camp crafts. I think we'd love to hear it, wouldn't we?
Absolutely, yeah, it'd be great to hear. What is it that you make when you're in the woods that really makes a camp feel like home? That's a really nice thing to hear from you guys.
Yeah.
And I do hope you all stay safe and have a fantastic week. Look after yourselves, look after other people, and just have a good one. Get outside. I'm looking forward to getting in my sleeping bag later because I'm pretty tired.
Yeah.
And this morning, Liam woke me up, bringing me something like coffee or something.
Yeah.
And and I was like, yeah, I'm coming, I'll get up now. And then, apparently, I thought I'd just got straight up, but apparently, an hour passed and I'd fallen back asleep and then sort of got up.
It was so funny. It was so, so funny, because you were like, yeah, I'm just going to get up in a minute, man. And I was just like, yeah, at ease, man, at ease. I was just like, I'm just going to chill here anyway and just watch the fire, because it blew it to coals and blew it to flame. And yeah, you just drifted off. It was great, but it takes it out of you. I mean, we did all that shelter building yesterday. We recorded a few episodes of Woe's Moon. We've been filming. We've done the bench today. You've done some carving. I've done some flint napping. Collecting firewood, cooking, general camp life takes it out of you as well.
It does. It's good. It's great exercise. It's great for the mind.
Great for the soul.
Yeah, it's great. So I do hope you guys get a chance to go out this week and experience the outdoors. Check us out on Anchor, Spotify, YouTube, Apple yeah. podcasts. We're pretty much on everything now. Send us a message. Let us know what you're up to. Let us know about your camp crafts. And I do hope you've enjoyed all the Woadsman content that's been coming your way.
That's it. Stay safe. Be sensible. Enjoy your time outdoors. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.